It's Saturday Night
Five.
Saturday night.
Get ready for the Saturday night.
Louder.
Saturday night's alright.
On Saturday night.
Alright, we are live for Dynasty Saturday Night 5. Dynasty Fantasy Football Podcast on the Going for Two Live Network. If you're listening on the Going for Two Live podcast feed audio, please make sure you subscribe, follow, like, rate, review, all that jazz. You're watching on the YouTubes or other visuals, do those things in that context as well. The likes, the subscribes, the comments, the notifications. Do it all. Feed the algorithm monster what it must be fed. I'm Brian Ford here, as always, with my co-host Josh Walker. Josh, how you doing?
Doing great. Thank you. I'm finally getting to the point of the offseason where I'm ready to look at my sleeper leagues outside of paying my dues. I think I'm ready to start looking at trades, all that. I needed a good break, but I think I'm almost there yet, so that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, you know, we've got free agency coming up soon. That's going to, put a lot of, make a lot of dominoes fall, and I think make some more trades happen. We were talking before the show, I'm completely exhausted. I'm not exactly sure why, but like the last week or so, like, I just feel it in, like, every organ of my body. But and that's why we didn't do a show last week, the night of the Saturday night of the combine, because, like, it was just going to be a lot of information to process, and we were both kind of exhausted, and the show would be, like, just crap. So we just decided to, you know. But here we are. All right, so for those of you who are new or don't remember, Dynasty Saturday Night 5, we use lists of five as a way to talk about dynasty fantasy football, whatever that topic might be. And tonight we're sort of revisiting our rookie rankings. We did an early rookie takes episode. We've gotten some more information, including, but not just, the combine. And so, you know, we adjusted our rankings, and, you know, not just for the website, but for us. And so we're here to talk about that tonight. We've got Kyle checking in, from Facebook, and the other Kyle, Senra from the Going for Two family, checking in as well. Nice to see you. Thanks for hopping in. Josh, if we took a look at just the combine, say, right, like, what might be your impressions, or in general, some takeaways, or how much does it even matter to how you're thinking about these rookies?
Well, I'll keep this brief, because some of these I'm going to talk about as some of my points later, but I didn't put too much stock into just 40 times alone. I think there's more context to game speed versus 40 and track speed and some other drills at the combine that highlight that. So that's one. And the other, I try not to be too reactionary. I try just being bored, not seeing football, seeing some of this stuff happen, like Worthy running a 4-2-1. I try not to let that really trump any research I did before or any film I watched before, just from a couple of days at a combine. So I'm trying to stay level-headed, try not to make any too many major moves until we start seeing the NFL draft and draft capital.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same place there. I'm not one of those combine doesn't matter people, but I'm not one of those, you know, combine tells us a lot. I think in general, for me, it moved people within the tier they were already in, didn't really move stuff that much. Any sort of like more major movement was mostly down toward the bottom of the ranks, just getting a little bit more information about some of the guys, confirming some things. You know, so I think for certain players it matters more. I think for certain drills matter more for certain players. Everything has context and nuance. Earlier this week I was talking to my other show. I was talking to Jay Stein from Debbie Royale and Football Guys. And there's Tej Smith. It's from a company called Summer Sports. Anyway, has an article out there about the rate of positive correlation between, you know, specific things that happen at the combine and each position's performance. So go check that out. Before we get into our list of five, going to pay the bills. Today's show is brought to you by Underdog. Our friends at Underdog They have everything. They are the industry leader. They've got the best ball, the pick'ems, the other sports besides football. You know, and when the season rolls around, you know, the DFS best ball. They're great, and they're taking a lot of my money now in these pre-NFL draft D-gen drafts. So why are we talking about that? If you are a new account on Underdog, you can use the promo code GF2 to get $100 of your first deposit matched. So, like, if you put in 50, you'll get 50 matched. You're not going to get the 100. Put in 100, you'll get the 100. But you put in 101, you'll still only get the 100. So squeeze as much out of Josh Norris's wallet as you can. Plunk down some coin, join some drafts, start playing, maybe even start winning. Get in those best ball streets. Or if you're weird like Josh and you like baseball, then, you know, I don't know, play baseball on there. All right. Time to get into our lists of five sort of takeaways, statements, whatever, as we revisit our rookie rankings for alliteration. So why don't you kick us off?
All right. So I'm just going to start with – I had two risers and two fallers I'm going to talk about. I'm going to go and talk about the two people who rose up a little bit in my rankings. And those are two wide receivers, Ricky Pearsall and Brian Thomas. I was already a little bit higher than Pearsall in consensus. I had around wide receiver 12, 13. But he really showed out at the combine. His RAS score was 9.54, which was top 10. It was ninth overall. And I was really impressed with his 40 time. He ran a 4.41, and his vertical and broad jump were in the 98th to 97th percentile. So I think that's really important for receivers. It shows that not just the 40 speed, but it shows he has explosion and athleticism that a lot of receivers don't have. And I think given his skill set, he needs that because he's really good at going and getting contested catches. Like you said, he's got a high point in the ball, and he's got some of the best hands in the class. And in 2022, he ran 67% from the slot, and his A-dot, his average depth of target, was 17 yards and 2.5 yards per route run. That just shows that he can play the big slot and run deep routes. And I think that really opens up the underneath for tight ends and receivers, but it also gives you a chance to make big plays over the middle when you have linebackers or slower safeties on you. So I think that's going to be really important, and that's got me really excited about him.
Yeah, I like him. I think I had him around like 14-ish or 12-ish before the combine. I got him in the top 10 now. But again, when rankings move, that's a combination of, you know, maybe bumping that one guy a bit, but also maybe bumping another guy down. So it's not just solely the reaction to Pearsall. I think the knock on Pearsall is, you know, if you're going to go by the numbers and say, you know, rule of thumb, you know, a guy who played 4 years and was in school 5 years, or, you know, the production didn't come until late. You know, those are some, you know, I don't know, light red flags, right? But I would argue that in this class, that's also kind of par for the course. I was finishing up the next round of stuff that I do in my huge, super awesome rookie spreadsheet. I have 67 wide receivers in there, right? Eight of them are early declares. It's less than 12%. That's just the way this class is, right? So you know, between COVID and NIL, like this, it's a weird class, right? So, you know, a lot of those early declare or, you know, and early breakout guys aren't going to be in this class. But the wide receiver class is deep, more so with like guys who can be wide receiver twos and threes on their team. Yep. You know, so that's just something to keep in mind. So my first item here will be in defense of the Ducks. Quack, quack. Now, Bucky Irving and Troy Franklin are both taking some hits after the combine, and I think it's a bit of an overreaction. For Bucky, yes, I understand with the 40 time and that sort of thing, and I think the broad jump were under par for us, what we wanted to see. You know, weighing in at 194 isn't optimal, although we've seen smaller guys. I understand now that the, you know, range of outcomes you know, might shift a little bit. The path might be narrower. Maybe the spectrum of players that you're comparing him to, you know, shifts a little bit. You know, maybe you look at the Oregon offense and now think, well, you know, how much of his production was because other guys like Franklin were sort of, you know, clearing out. So I get all that, right? But, you know, I think it's also important that if we're going to say the combine, we shouldn't overreact to it. We should also then say that his 10 split was fine. His 10 split was right around Breece Hall's 10 split, right? Which is kind of more important for running backs than the long speed, especially these days, right? The film still shows a productive player who was very agile, was very good in space, was a good receiver. So I'm not going to knock him too much. It's going to sound like I knocked him a lot, but I'll explain. So going into the combine, he was like sort of my placeholder RB1. It was like, listen, this guy's got a skill set where he can catch passes and be good in space. The NFL wants that. So I know that's good for fantasy. Let me just slap him there. I have a few more questions about the other guys, right? Between some guys moving up and dinging Bucky a little bit, you know, I've got him down as like my wide receiver, running back 5 or 6 now. And it sounds like a lot, but really two things. One, in that pack of 8, they were smushed together so tight anyway, movement within them is not dramatic. And two, really what it did was it kind of gave me like, okay, within that tier of 8, here's the tier 1A and then like a tier 1B. Here's guys that toward the top, you know, between a explosiveness and a 3-down skill set, speed, athleticism, I'm a little more confident that they'll hit and that they have a better ceiling. And then here's these 4 other guys who for various reasons I don't, right? I just think people are burying Bucky a little too much, right? Same thing with Troy Franklin. Yes, he weighed in at 176 instead of like, you know, like 187, like I had him listed, right? Yeah, the 40 was not, you know, great. It was underwhelming, especially the 10 split. You know, you want him to get off the line of scrimmage quickly because now if his 10 split is slow, what you're then saying is, well, we need him in the next 30 yards, right? Like, so now he's just more of a deep threat. I understand that. I know people didn't like how he looked in the gauntlet, right? Which, by the way, never happens in an NFL game. Did you know that you don't get 10 passes thrown at you in 20 seconds in an actual NFL game the same way that you don't do a broad or vertical jump in an NFL game? I get it. I do. I understand why people are a little down on him. It now causes us to maybe cast doubt on, like, you know, wide open Pac-12 offenses versus bad Pac-12 defense. I get it, right? Here's the thing, though, and I'm going to get into these other guys later. He still has, I think, better twitch and route running than Brian Thomas Jr. and especially Adonai Mitchell. He's been super productive. Analytically, he checks all the thresholds, even more so than those guys do. He's still fast enough, you know, to be a threat in the NFL, and I still have him as my wide receiver 5 in a tier with Xavier Worthy above the other guys.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on par with you. At least I'll touch on Troy Franklin first. I have him still as wide receiver 5. I had him at 4, but I did move Brian Thomas Jr. up after seeing his 40 time. Because I knew he was able to outrun defenders, but I thought it was just by him using his body and like just being a smart route runner. But showing that speed, it gives me a little more hope that he's not just going to be a boom bust, that he can take short passes and take it up the field. But I also still really like Troy Franklin. I think he's going to be a great get for a team. And I still have him above Xavier Worthy, which I don't think is consensus anymore. Bucky Irving, I did move down to 7. He was also my RB1. And I'm kind of concerned about his vertical and broad jump. That's something that even though you run a slow 40 time, like I'm about to talk about estimate, he ran a slow 40 time, but he's very explosive in those drills. So that is a little bit concerning, but at the same time, that doesn't, like I said at the start, doesn't trump over all the tape I've seen, his college production, and all of that. So I still have him in the same tier as you. My tier went down to 7 running backs instead of 8, but he's still in that first tier. So that, depending on where he lands, he can move right back up.
Are you tired of the Andre Estime just finished his 40 jokes yet, or –
No, because I'm going to use this. Like, people said that about Kyren Williams, yeah, and now it takes an arm and a leg to get Kyren Williams. So I'm not. I'm just going to do like I did with him. He was one of my most rostered rookies that year. I'm just going to keep doing that. And yeah, I'll just go ahead and talk about him because he was going to be my next point anyways. Mm-hmm. I moved him down to RB5, which is only two spots, but it wasn't me moving him down. It was more me moving up a few other guys ahead of him. His 40 was last at the combine for running backs, but his he had a 38-inch vertical, which is fourth, and 10 foot 5 inch broad jump, which was also top five. And I think you can have a slow 40 and still be good at football. Like there's a place for that in the NFL. His PFF grade last year was 94.2, and his college production was one of the best out of any of the guys in this class. So I'm not looking at that. He's still explosive. He's still a really big bruising runner. And I've been seeing that he's been talking with the Ravens. So if he falls on the right team, I'm going to be drafting a lot of him. And if anything, I think he should go in the middle of the second, but I'm not going to take him there because I think I can get him at the start of the third round, depending on landing spot. So that's just another thing. Like, just because you can get someone you like there doesn't mean you always should. Mm-hmm. Like, if he's going to fall to the third, I'll just wait till the third and get another receiver in the second. So I just wanted to touch on that too.
Yeah, I flirted with taking Estime out of that tier of eight dudes, but now he's just in that sort of soft – he's after that soft tier break between like tier 1A and 1B. You know, he's in there with Bucky and Blake and Braylon. Yeah, I mean, if we're going to say, like, let's not overreact to 40 times, then let's not overreact to 40 times, right? Does it give you a picture of a guy who, you know, first of all, probably shouldn't have run? Like, what is his agent doing? But, you know, of a guy who now – but maybe his path is a little narrower or maybe the ceiling's a little lower. Yeah, sure. But we kind of already knew going into it that, like, he's a competent but receiver but won't get used much. And we didn't expect him to, you know, break off 70-yard runs to begin with. Like, how much are you really, really going to ding him? The question, I think, is where you were at with, you know, how is this going to play out after we get landing spots in the rookie draft boards? I have a feeling that landing spot and draft capital, we keep saying, oh, well, that's going to determine so much for the running backs. I think that's going to determine so much for the running backs for each individual manager, but that there will be less consensus maybe than in the past. Precisely because we started with guys who are, you know, packed tightly in this tier of eight who aren't great to begin with, you know. Like, I don't know. I'm going to just, you know, off the top of my head here, pull this up and say, let's say Estime goes the first pick in the fourth round, right, to Carolina at pick 100, right? And then say a guy who's generally regarded above him these days, right, Blake Corum, goes, I don't know. Let's say Jacobs leaves Las Vegas and Corum goes 11 picks later to the Raiders, right? Where he's got Zamir White and Aiden O'Connell, right? like you know, you'd be hard pressed to argue to me that, you know, Corum is going to be Josh Jacobs and he should be above Estime in, yeah, you know what I mean? So I think it's still going to come down to, you know, what individual managers think, and that where the running backs are placed in drafts will be kind of all over the place from league to league. There is a lot of talk that I've seen about, like, you know, from the 1-9 or 1-10 to like the 205 is again that area that's pretty flat, but that what you want to do there is bail on the receivers and grab the better running backs. I'm not so sure that that's what I'm doing, but yeah.
No, I'm with you. There's still some receivers I like Malik Washington, Ladd McConkey, Pearsall even, that I'd rather take. Unless one of these guys like Jalen Wright gets a really good landing spot, maybe then. But most likely, I'm just going to take the receivers in the early second and wait till late second to use on running backs.
All right. We're doing estimation jokes in – in the chat.
Yeah.
Fun stuff. I believe Kyle, being such a Francophile and perhaps Francophone living in Canada, might have a more stylistic way to pronounce Estime's name. Please let us know if you do. All right, my next point, I'm gonna talk about Xavier Worthy, right? So Xavier Worthy, I've had him as my wide receiver for pretty much since day one. To me, he's always been more than just a speed guy, and I think the combine was good and bad for him in that regard. So would I have liked him better at the 6'1", 172 that he was listed at when I wrote the article about him? Yeah, sure. Yeah, right. Excuse me. But, you know, even if that meant he was a little slower, sure, fine. You can't double count his speed to bump him up all that much. You knew he was really fast. Super fast guy, runs fast. Shocking headline, right? Also, at the same time, you can't now say, oh, well, he's just a speed guy. He's John Ross. Look at these guys with these low 40 times and how bad that is. You know, he's always been fast and quick. He beats guys. He gets open. He's twitchy. You can use him in different ways. Both he and Mitchell suffered from, a crowded offense and inconsistent quarterback play. I still love Worthy, and I think if you're bumping him up too much or down too much because of that stuff, I think it's a complete overreaction. For me, with Worthy, I'm still going to keep him at four. I still think, you know, late first in a super flex is appropriate. The question is going to be for me in leagues where I have like the 108, 109, depending on draft capital landing spot, am I going to be confident that the people behind me probably want Brian Thomas more than I do? And can I trade back and maybe get a little bit on top and still take Worthy at like the 110 or 111? So yeah, Xavier Worthy, don't double count the speed, but also don't say that he's just speed. He's interestingly enough on a bunch of lists that are Xavier Worthy does this thing really well and everybody else on the list is bad. Like they're good at that thing, but they turned out bad. And really that just speaks to the fact that he's really good at a lot of things. So he's not those guys because those guys are only on like the one list. So yes, Worthy is worthy of my love.
Yeah, I agree. I moved him up a spot. I have him at six right behind Franklin and Thomas. And I just think they have higher floors ultimately. I could see, I don't know. That size is a little bit concerning, but the way the NFL is turning, I don't think it matters quite as much. But it is still something to keep in the back of your mind. But, yeah, he's going to be really exciting. If he falls on the right team, he's going to be fun to watch. So I'm actually really excited about him. My next one. Yeah, this will be the last time I bring this up. Talking about game speed versus 40 speed, and then I'll stop talking about it until my fallers. So I just think there's a lot more that goes into your game speed than it is just how fast you can run, getting in the stance and running out. Some people just aren't good at that. But, you know, you got your IQ, you got your head, especially for running backs, you got vision, how to read the offense, knowing the plays and knowing, like, how your offensive linemen work. And then receivers, you got to learn how to use your body to manipulate the DB, like know when to cut, when their back's turned to you, make your cut, stuff like that. And that doesn't always translate to 40 time. And I was just curious. So I went and listed a few players who had pretty good success, but had slow 40 times. We got Devontae Adams at a 4.55. Xavier Howard, he's a cornerback, 4.56. Larry Fitzgerald, 4.6. Alfred Morris, 4.6. Jerry Rice ran a 4.71. So I could only imagine the Twitter comments when Jerry Rice coming out of college and running a 4.7. Maurice Claret ran a 4.72, and even AB, Antonio Brown, ran a 4.56. He didn't look slow on the field. He was still able to outrun and get open all the time. So that's also kind of a point to Keon Coleman. He ran a slow 40, but I look a little bit more into the gauntlet than you might. Like watching him run and be able to catch the ball at full speed and even still gaining speed, that's encouraging for me for someone who I think is slower. It shows that once he separates, he can continue to accelerate and that he doesn't have to take as much time to make his cuts or slow down to concentrate on catching the ball. So I just try not to look too much into 40. I look into some of the other factors like the broad, the three cone, you know, their shuttle, stuff like that. So just don't get bogged down if someone had a bad 40 time, and you could still be very good in the NFL like Kyren Williams has if you run a slow 40.
Yeah, you know, I generally agree there. Game speed, play speed, more important. I brought it up, you know, more or less with Bucky. You know, I think it's true with Audric Estime and things like that. You know, the 40, whatever, it gets eyeballs on the TV coverage. You know, the 10 split to me is more important than the total, you know, the total 40. I think that says a little bit about your, like, initial explosion. And I was going to ask you about Keon Coleman because, honestly, you know, there are people who – his doubters, and I'm one, but I didn't do this, knocked him because of the combine. And his supporters, who I'm not, you know, said, oh, but look at the GPS, look at the miles per hour, look at how well he did in the gauntlet. You know, I'm willing to say that the gauntlet can show that you were – confident in your hands, that you're not thinking while it's going on, but I don't know that I'm dinging somebody who did it like just okay, you know. Yeah,
it's one of those things that's kind of like an eye test. Like, he just looks like he's comfortable doing that, and that's something I want to see, because I didn't knock Franklin for not being great at it, because I've seen other things on tape that show he's still gonna be really good,
you know. And another thing about
the end all be all,
another thing about Keon Coleman, like, and I know that I like to pour cold water on him, but the thing about, okay, let me rewind a little bit. Zach Reed, Tacit Assassin on Twitter and part of the Dynasty Dummies, you know, talks about how wide receiver is really like five different positions, you know, which makes, I think, ranking and tiering them especially hard. When we look at a guy like Keon Coleman and we say, you know, how narrow a path he has, how few ways that he wins, and the ways in which he wins are not as popular in the NFL as they used to be. All those things are true, right? Say he goes to a quarterback who, you know, is a fire that trust ball in there and you go get it quarterback, right? That isn't like a timing and precision quarterback. You know, what if Keon Coleman ends up on the Colts with Anthony Richardson? Right, who isn't super accurate. I'll admit that. Like, yeah, you know, my love for Anthony Richardson was never based on the accuracy of his passing. And I think people overrated, you know, the raw completion percentage. But anyway, what I'm saying is he ends up on the Colts, you know, getting some trust balls. You know, he'll be there. Maybe Pittman leaves after the franchise tag year. And you just, and you've got, you know, Anthony Richardson firing those lasers in there and saying, Keon, go get it. You know, I'm a little more interested, you know, than I might be in some other places. Yeah.
No, I agree. I think he'll be able to find a role, but yeah, landing spot won't matter a good bit with him and the quarterback.
All right. So, I am going to do tight end because I want to save my big juicy one for a little later. I'm going to do Jared Wiley. You know, going into it, I only watched a little bit of him. Heard a lot of really good Senior Bowl reports on him, which is kind of why I watched a bit of him. You know, he's a good mover. He's athletic enough. He's not like one of those, I'm a wide receiver playing tight end, but he moves enough and has been in line and in the slot. He showed his athleticism at the combine. Excuse me. Just let me grab him real quick. We're looking at, not that, you know, a RAS is the end-all be-all, but 9.52 RAS, 123.3 height-adjusted speed score, which is what you want tight ends above 110. 37 vert, you know, that's not bad, right? You know, became a bigger part of the TCU offense in 2023. I like him in a class where tight ends are not deep, and you're saying, okay, who is maybe a fourth-round, you know, flyer that I'll take if I missed on, you know, Jatavion Sanders in the second or third round. You know, I think Jared Wiley's got to be up there in your consideration. The one knock I've seen on him is that he needs to improve a little bit more against man coverage. He's better against zone, but there's a there. There's something to build on, and I think he's a guy who in the fourth or even maybe fifth round, who knows, of your rookie drafts you can grab or get later off waivers. So just want to put that name on people's radar if it's not on there already. TCU tight end Jared Wiley.
Yeah, so I agree. I haven't really looked much into him, but he did. I've seen some of the Senior Bowl reports, and I'm just going to go and take that and talk about the tight end I was going to. Mm-hmm. And there's actually been the most shift that happened out of my rankings was a tight end after the combine. And part of the reason is Theo Johnson. I now have him ranked as a tight end 3. I had him 4th before, but my tiers have changed a little. I put him up into the 2nd tier with Jatavion Sanders, which I'll talk about him at the end. But his RAS score was 9.99, which is 1st overall in the whole draft, which can happen at tight end. We saw that last year. But he's 6'6", 260, ran a 4.5, 7.40, and got 2nd in tight ends vertical with 39.5 and a 10-foot, 5-inch broad jump. And his shuttle time was 1st. And I really think this is important for him because we've seen what – a good combine can do for tight ends. Like Zach Kuntz last year, he probably was not even on a lot of people's draft boards for the NFL draft, probably going to go undrafted until he came out and showed out really good at the combine. So the main point of this is I think this is really going to help his draft capital. I think showing out like this might make a team that's really needy at tight end get him a round or two before they might have before. And the higher, the better the draft capital get, we all know, the more the team's willing to put you out there and see what you can do and get their money's worth. So I moved him up. I'm really excited to see him. Penn State can be really bad for tight ends just because it's the Big Ten. It's a really weird offense. So I'm not really worried as much about production from him as I am some other guys. But he did have 10 touchdowns, so that shows that he can find the end zone and is a good red zone target, being 6'6", 260 with that vertical.
Oh, yeah. God, I love that. Yeah, you know, for folks who may, you know, may not know, you know, and for those who do, I'm sorry if, like, it sounds like I'm telling you something that you already know. But, you know, the athleticism stuff matters the most here with tight ends because the usage in college is so uneven and in some cases almost completely missing that this kind of has a better way of telling us who can be successful in the NFL than looking at a lot of those straight production numbers to a point, right? I mean, yeah, Zach Kuntz flew up people's rankings, but then got the 7th round draft capital. Like Tip Raymond, you know, he tested well, like his RAS is above 9, but, you know, pump the brakes. He's kind of a run blocking guy who, you know, might catch a few passes here and there, you know. So you know, be selective about it too. You can't just go on the athleticism. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 40 time matters the most to tight ends for me.
All right. So I will do my juicy one now. That's what she said. Pump the brakes on Brian Thomas Jr. and Adonai Mitchell. Matt Wallman says that speed is the cleavage for the NFL. We all know the NFL likes big, fast guys. And here are these guys who are big, especially tall, and ran, you know, 4.33 and 4.35, something like that, in the 40s. So everybody is, you know, getting so excited, frothy at the Brian Thomas Jr. lock first round. And I get it. I'm not saying that these guys aren't good. I'm happy to draft them. But pump the brakes, okay? Their ceiling in those players, right? They're fine picks. We love the size-speed combo. But let's be real here. One, no three-cone. The NFL has made the three-cone so late in the day that the wide receivers are essentially boycotting it because it requires – and shout-out to Dallas Hyder for you know, being real granular and specific with this. It requires the most explosion of any drill. And so you have to stay warm and use your most explosion at the end of the day when you've been there since like 7 a.m. And so like almost zero wide receivers did the three cone. You want to see the three cone for the big fast guys like that. You want to know that they're not just deep guys. You want to see their twitch. You want to see their agility. And I'm hoping they do it at their pro days, right? And then know what you're buying, right? Let's say you call these guys randomly wide receiver 5, wide receiver 6. It's really exciting, right? You're like, okay, after the big three, you know, here's a guy who's 6'4", you know, great offense, all this production. Okay, you know, I get it. But one, they can be misses, right? They can be, you know, people like Pickens more than I do, but I consider him like kind of a miss, but just like the higher end of the misses, right? Treylon Burks, Hakeem Butler, Terrace Marshall, Jalen Rager. Like, we've had the big, fast guys missed before, right? These are the guys that are missing the most in the last few years, especially, right? And analytically, there's a lot to that. Scott Barrett from Fantasy Points has done several tweets about this. I'm going to pull up one where we have one-year wonders and late breakouts. So the list is day 1 to 2 wide receivers. In other words, rounds 1 to 3, right? They've had greater than 60 yards per game in their last college season, but the season before that had fewer than 35 yards per game. So these are your came out of nowhere guys, essentially, right? And he mixed in this year's rookies with day 1 to 2 projected draft capital in there. Let me read you the list. Terrace Marshall, Ricky Pearsall, Christian Watson, Cedric Tillman, Chase Claypool, Brendan Rice, Henry Ruggs, Jonathan Mingo, Anthony Schwartz, Brian Thomas, Devin Duvernay, DJ Chark, A.D. Mitchell, Amari Rodgers, Kadarius Toney, Paris Campbell, Jalen Hyatt, Chad Williams, whoever that is, Velus Jones Jr., the famous, J-Mo, Miles Boykin, and Xavier Leggett, right? Not a great list to be on, right? Now, there's more to it. There's context and nuances, which is what I say about every player. With every player, you have to consider everything. With A.D. Mitchell, he switched from quarterback to wide receiver. On Georgia, you know, crowded depth chart, competing with Brock Bowers and stuff on a team that runs a lot. You know, all that's true, but then at the same time, you know, why didn't you break out? And then you also have the inconsistent quarterback play with Ewers, so I get all that. But you can't ignore the other part that tells you the story that there's a chance he could miss, right? Two, wide receiver 5 or 6, whatever you want to call it, right? That's relative to a class, right? 2024 is a deep wide receiver class, but you know, A, it's deep with wide receiver 2s and 3s for the most part. And B, it's its own thing, right? Where are you putting guys like Brian Thomas Jr. and Adonai Mitchell, I'm tall and fast, you know, in with the other wide receivers who are already in the NFL, right? And importantly, where would you value the pick that you can get A.D. Mitchell and Brian Thomas Jr. at relative to those wide receivers, right? So if I look at my dynasty wide receiver rankings with the veterans with no rookies in them right now, you know, I'm looking at a bunch of guys that I'd rather have than Brian Thomas Jr. and Adonai Mitchell that, you know, I don't know that people will give you the 110 for. You know, T. Higgins, Tank Dell, Pittman, Jordan Addison, Deebo Samuel, DK Metcalf, Zay Flowers, Rashee Rice, you know, like maybe Jaden Reed and Josh Downs. These are all guys that I would probably want ahead, Nico Collins, you know, ahead of Brian Thomas Jr. or A.D. Mitchell, right? So when you say, oh, top 5 wide receiver in the class, okay, where are you slotting him in with the other NFL wide receivers? And third and finally, the late first to early second is always that area where there's a lot of opportunity to say, you know what, the guys in this range might be a little overvalued. Now is when I trade back and especially trade out, trade across, trade to 2025, get a random 2025 first that mathematically has a better chance of being above the 1.9, 1.10 next year. And then get the guys in the late second and third that you know are worth that, that aren't being inflated. Now, you know, the thing is that Scott Barrett and other people might be right about all this. And I am certainly knocking them and saying they could be misses, right? But the NFL, right, likes big and fast, and they're going to take swings on it because of the ceiling, and there are going to be first rounders. So is it inflated? Are these guys overvalued? Maybe, right? But as a dynasty manager, when you're looking at, hey, you know, here are the good signs, right? Here's the first round draft capital. These are the types of guys that you swing on for ceiling and upside, right? Because a lot of times these guys that can be misses are the high variance guys that could also have high ceiling. All that said, pump the brakes on Brian Thomas and Adonai Mitchell. I have them in the same tier as I have Ladd McConkey, Roman Wilson, and Ricky Pearsall. I have it McConkey, Thomas, Wilson, Pearsall, Mitchell, 6-10.
Yeah, I'm only going to push back on you about Brian Thomas. I agree with you about Adonai Mitchell. I do think there is some context with Adonai Mitchell that does kind of – he had a pretty bad injury on the Georgia offense in transfer. So a lot of stuff goes into, like, trying to adjust. But still, I think people are hyping him up way too much. The production in college from Brian Thomas is really what gets me. He had 17 touchdowns and almost 1,200 yards. And that was with Malik Nabers on his team. I just think that's something that Quentin Johnson, some of these other guys didn't have. Like, they don't have that touchdown equity that Brian Thomas has. You know, you can say a lot of that to the offense, but that's in the SEC. 17 touchdowns, that's the most in the NCAA. And I think that gives a higher floor than I've seen him compared to George Pickens, Martavis Bryant. I get those, but I think he has a higher floor than some of those guys with a potentially even higher ceiling, because even though he ran a 4.34, it looked like he stumbled a little bit. So I don't know. I think he's going to be really good. I have him as my wide receiver 4. I moved Rome up ahead of him because Rome did really well. But, like, I'm happy getting him at the end of the first round. But yeah, I get it. If you don't like him, trade out and shoot for 25 or go back a little bit and get another receiver, you know, like Marvin Mims or something like that added on. So.
Yeah, and to your point, I have Ladd and him kind of as that soft, like, tier 3A, right? So I recognize that there's a difference between him and Mitchell, yeah. Right? Yeah. And then Roman Wilson, Pearsall, and Mitchell as sort of that tier of 3B. I'm a little more wary of him than I think also what goes into that too is I'm thinking about what gets rewarded with targets in the NFL these days, right? And so after the first 3 or 4 or 5 wide receivers for me, who do I want? I don't know. Like in a PPR dynasty format, I could argue that, you know, I should take Ladd McConkey before either of those guys pretty easily, you know, because those guys are doing things that aren't getting rewarded much in the NFL. I agree. There's more twitch and route running to Brian Thomas. There's more, I think, positive case for his ceiling. I get it. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
What happens if Brian Thomas goes to the Chiefs?
People are going to, oh, geez, forget it. Like, I'm going to have almost zero of him because he's going to be like, yeah, no, it's, oof. I mean, don't get me wrong. That could completely work out, right? But you know, I mean, you're getting the ball thrown to you from Patrick Mahomes. Okay, fine. You know, Do I think he is better for them than MVS? Yeah, sure. But I also, you know, I don't know, right? Like, are they still throwing?
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, ranking wise, you'd have to move him up because
Rashee Rice and Kelsey
run 70 yards.
There.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, okay. If Brian Mitchell goes to the Chiefs, but Ladd McConkey goes, so say Brian Thomas goes 32 overall to the Chiefs, Ladd McConkey goes, I don't know, 36 overall to Washington and Cliff Kingsbury's air raid, you know. Does he go 33 overall to Carolina as a desperately needed outlet for Bryce Young? Yeah. You know, does he go to Tennessee, right? That might be bad, right? Because the quarterback there, first of all, is not as good as people think, but also doesn't like to throw short, you know. It depends. It depends where the other guys go, where I'm going to put it. But I just think I happen to be lower on these big, fast guys than some other people are.
No, that's fair. And to be fair, I think he'll go before pick 32, given he just ran a 4.3. It's just fun to think about. So
what if Brian Thomas Jr. goes 17th overall to Jacksonville and Ladd McConkey goes 32 overall to Kansas City to do what Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney couldn't do?
I think that would be better for Rashee Rice because he would just take over what Rashee Rice was doing, running short intermediate routes, and which I don't know. I mean, obviously, it'd be good. Any receiver that goes to the Chiefs is going to boost their stock because you have a great quarterback and a really good offensive coordinator. So I would still keep Ladd where he was, but because I have him right behind. Let me see where I have Ladd McConkey. Okay, I'd move him up ahead of Keon Coleman. I have Keon Coleman 7 still. So I'd move Ladd up to 7, and that'd bump him into maybe end of the first round if he's on the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. So I had two fallers from the combine, and that was more because things they didn't do. And I might have already had questions about certain things and them not doing it because I think they would have done bad is kind of a red flag to me. And those two guys are Jatavion Sanders and Braylon Allen. So I'll start with Braylon Allen. The only thing he did or even did well was the bench press. I don't care about that from a running back. Does nothing for me. You've seen his biceps and pecs. You know he's able to bench press. But he was almost last in both the broad jump and vertical, which show a player's athleticism and explosiveness. And, I mean, that topped with not even running the 40. It does have me questioning his athleticism a bit, and I don't think that's really a good thing for a guy his size. Like, I don't think Estime should have ran the 40, but he should have done the other drills, which he excelled in. And I think that kind of shows that there's explosiveness, and I don't think Braylon Allen has that. So I knocked him down out of that top tier. He's now I think I even moved him behind Will Shipley, who I think is going to be fine. I think he's going to have a pretty high floor, or decent floor, not high. But I just don't know what Braylon Allen's going to be able to do besides just come in at the goal line kind of I'm blanking on his name. I always do. The guy that played for Chicago this year and was at Carolina.
Foreman.
Yep. Kind of like something like that where he might have a few good games, but overall the upside's just not there. And as far as – same thing goes for Sanders. He ran one of the slowest 40s and was very slow in the shuttle. I mean, he did have decent college production, but he only had 7 career touchdowns. I want to see more out of that out of a top tight end prospect. And all this did to me was push him down to the 3rd round. I want nothing to do with any of the tight ends through the first 2 rounds outside of Brock Bowers. Some of these guys like Benson, Lloyd, and Jalen Wright, I'd rather take them towards the end of the 2nd where Sanders might have been going. And then take a chance on Sanad or Theo Johnson late 3rd, early 4th. I'd much rather do that than get Sanders where he's going. So those were the fallers for me, and that was more on inactivity for already red flags that I had about them.
Yeah, you know, at cost, I think, you know, I don't want Sanders relative to other guys. I'm probably a little more forgiving of Braylon Allen and probably see a little bit more of the path for him being, you know, he's still in that tier of 8 for me, but in that, like, 1B tier in the bottom 4. You know, I think there's a path to him being not just short yardage and goal line, a little bit more than that, some early down and distance stuff. But – yeah, you know, is that big bruiser, you know, and maybe, I don't know, you know, I heard a Brandon Jacobs comp to him a while back, maybe 10 years ago in the NFL, like his sort of game would be a little more, you know, people would look on it more favorably, but yeah, it's weird, right? Because I remember like, oh, this 17-year-old ripping up the Big Ten, oh, I can't wait. And then like as recently as, I don't know, the summer before the college season started, oh, you know, top 3-4 RB in the class. And it's like, doesn't look that way anymore. All right, my 5th and final. I'm sorry, keep going.
There's just one. I don't think there's a place in the NFL for guys like that because Derrick Henry, like, yeah, he'll run you over, but he will also outrun you once he gets going. And guys like LeGarrette Blount, Brandon Jacobs, they weren't able to do that. Frank Gore even. So I don't think there's – I think if you're going to be able to do that, you need to at least have some breakaway speed. And I just don't think he has that.
right. My fifth and final, by the way, howdy, the network. My fifth and final item is some deeper risers that may be on people's radars, just to take a look. The first one I'm going to do, I'm going to tell people to be careful. Isaac Guerrero, running that 4-3-3 at 220, gets people all frothy. It's a fifth-year player, right? Couldn't break the depth chart at Wisconsin. Okay, so you've got Chaz Mazzulli and Braylon Allen there. Goes to Louisville, has to share time with Jawar Jordan, who's nothing really impressive, and who in fact had a 40 time much closer to the one I expected for Guerrero. So you're splitting carries with that guy. You really only had that 1 year, that fifth year. Just be careful shooting him up the rankings just because of the testing. Kind of the same thing with Tyrone Tracy, sixth-year player, convert from wide receiver, so you like, you know, the catching upside. Certainly tested well, but, you know, sixth-year player, you know, was down in your RB20s rankings before this for a reason. You know, he's doing it, like, on the Purdue depth chart and not, you know, the Ohio State. So just, you know, pump the brakes a little bit. Jermaine Burton is interesting. Tested well, I think, you know, checked boxes, confirmed some priors for people. He's a guy who, you know, a while back we were talking about possibly being a first round dynasty rookie draft pick in 2024. And even had some buzz if he came out in 2023. He has since slid then, but he's got pretty good size, pretty good hands. He tested well with the athleticism. He's a guy that might be going late that might, you know, listen, I would not be shocked, and this might be spicy. I'm not trying to be spicy. I would not be shocked if a guy like A.D. Mitchell flames out and busts, and a guy like Jermaine Burton is much more reliable. You know, may not be as sexy, but that's it. I'm intrigued by Kamani Vidal. I had him in the teens in my running back rankings. He's up to about 12 or 13 now. I don't normally like guys like this. You know, we're looking at a four-year player, but, you know, showed out at the Senior Bowl. He's got that. He's 5'8", 213, so he's got that kind of like bowling ball build, but came in a little lighter than I expected, so that's actually kind of good. It's not like the full bowling ball, right? Weight-adjusted speed score of 107.7. You want running backs to be over 100. Pretty good RAS at 8.89. Was kind of, you know, middle of the pack, not toward the bottom in Lance Zierlein's film scores. 4.46 40, you know, 37.5 vert, like it's an athlete. And what he, so that's the kind of guy that at the combine is saying, okay, I know on my film I'm racking up all this production on Troy, right? Like against that competition that Troy plays. But yo, look at this, right? I'm as good an athlete as a lot of these guys from these Power Five conferences. So something to keep in mind. I'm kind of intrigued by Kamani Vidal. And then last but not least, Brendan Rice is a very mixed sort of reviews from people. Some people are like, you know, great athleticism testing, you know, let's bump him up. Me, I'm a little more mixed on him, a little more doubtful about what his game is and what his traits are and what his ceiling is. But certainly a guy that tested well and maybe rose a little bit in my rankings. Bub Means from Pittsburgh, also very athletic. But again, one of these big, fast guys, late producers, fifth-year breakout. Not even really a breakout, but like his best year was his fifth year. So be a little careful with that guy, with those big, fast guys. But those are just some people who have been rising that may not have been on some people's radars that I wanted to talk about a little bit. No hot take really there.
Yeah, a few of those that I was already a little bit higher on Jermaine Burton, and I'm going to be surprised. I was, even though he had a really good combine, had a good RAS score and showed out in the 40 invert, I thought he would run a little bit faster because when I watched his tape, it looks like his game speed might even be a little bit faster than that. So he's one of my favorite targets in the third round if I don't want to go after a tight end. And then Guerrero, he was down in my 20s, so I moved him up a little bit. I still have him at like around 15, but that's just lack of any other guys I really have faith in. So yeah, I think those are some good names.
And that's it, right? Or did you do your fifth and final one already? Oh, geez.
Yeah, it was the Fallers I did.
Oh, brain fog from being so exhausted like we were talking about at the beginning. All right, folks, I guess that'll do it. Free agency's coming up, you know, and that's going to be really interesting because I always talk about this. Like, at this point in the year, we look at these four-round rookie mocks and we're like, oh, this class is so – you're still getting this guy in the fourth. It's like, listen, like, free agency is going to eliminate some needs for some teams. It'll open up some needs for some other teams, but it's going to take some people out of the running for running backs, right? You know, and then the NFL is going to crap all over it by taking guys much later than we thought, you know, really separating the chaff from the wheat. So, you know, but anything that you're looking forward to or anything, any predictions for free agency?
No, what I do in free agency, especially this year, I'm trying to get more ahead of it and try and know or try and guess what players are going to get moved and maybe go ahead and try and start making some trades for them before this happens, before the price inflates. That's the only thing. And I really need to sit down, look at the potential moves and try and jump out ahead of that. That's what I'm going to do this week. Like Jerry Jeudy, he already went to the Browns. So it's starting to happen. So just a little advice, just try and stay ahead of it. If you think someone's going to get moved to a better position, go ahead and try and go trade for him now.
Tough thing is some of the best free agents are running backs, right? And it's like, do you really want to be trading for Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs in early March? Like, I don't know.
Saquon, maybe, just the hopes that he goes to Houston or somewhere like that, especially because they didn't franchise tag him, I don't think. So there's a good chance he will get moved. So Saquon is definitely at the top of the list. I'm not going to overpay. I'm going to see you get as little as I can for him. You
know? This will be a really fascinating season because we have a combination of a better than we expected a few months ago running back free agent class and a sort of, you know, not bad rookie running class, but one that, you know, doesn't have a lot of juice to it where, like, you know, the best running back is about as good as like the eighth or 10th wide receiver in this class. So that combined is going to be really interesting, right? Like, you know, if you're a team, are you going to give Josh Jacobs, you know, a 2-year deal, you know, with, I don't know how much guaranteed, I don't know, $15 million, something like that, right? Or are you going to take your chance on Trey Benson, you know, in the fourth round, right, on a rookie deal? Like, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited to do an episode talking about stuff like that a little bit later. Once it all settles, once the draft settles down, it'll be interesting to look back and see.
All right, folks, time to land the plane on this one. If you're listening on the Going for Two live audio feed, please make sure you like, follow, subscribe, rate, review, all that jazz. If you're watching us here on the visuals, wherever it might be, do those other algorithm things too. Like, comment, subscribe, notifications. I don't know, whatever's happening on Twitch. I don't know if, like, I have cat ears on there, because there's a filter. I don't know. But, you know, like us over there, too, and follow Going for Two. We have a whole lot of family of content for you at Going for Two. The website has all sorts of things from DFS to redraft, best ball, dynasty, rookies, all that jazz. We have the Discord that's on and pop, and it's free. Go to goingfor2.com, bottom right, purple thing. Click it. Josh, time for plugs.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Rotonaut, R-O-T-O-N-A-U-T. And recently I haven't been doing too much football tweeting. I just did two industry leagues for fantasy baseball. And actually Tuesday I'm doing my first auction draft for baseball with a buddy of mine who wanted to do one. So I'm going to do that. That's something new I haven't done. Might try it for football next year if I enjoy it. So I'll be tweeting about that. But also, as we get closer, I will be tweeting about rookies in the draft. You can find all that at Twitter and all my dynasty rankings at goingfor2.com.
All right. You can find me at FFJunkie_ on the Twitters. Rankings and articles on goingfor2.com. I've been doing some rookie profiles. Going to be doing a few more of those. It's the off season. I write a little bit more. You can find me midweeks audio only with Dynasty Fever at Dynasty Fever Pod. Recent guest was Jay Stein of the Debbie Royale and Football Guys. real deep dive into analytics, but not just like, hey, what do the analytics say about this guy? We did a really nice discussion on like process and why you do things and why you weight certain things certain ways. And I really liked it. Yeah. And of course, here as well, every Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Coming up right on an hour. We're good.
All right, folks. That's a wrap. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening.
Go Braves.